feast, and there's a healthy reminder for them.
Nutrition experts are suggesting keeping the salt shaker off of the Thanksgiving table this year. They say unless you really cooked from scratch, there's plenty of sodium already hidden in the menu. Many store-bought turkeys are pumped full of salty flavoring, and stuffing mix and green bean casserole alone can hold the sodium allotment for the whole day. Try choosing fresher frozen vegetables over canned, low-sodium broth, and use herbs and lemon instead of salt. Colleen Capon, Fox News Radio.
Now, in the past, Christmas shopping started the day after Thanksgiving. Not anymore. Some Kmarts open at 6 a.m. today. Walmart and Toys R Us open later tonight. Many more stores will start offering Black Friday deals at midnight, and some people are already lined up for them.
I'm a college student, so I'm taking a break now anyway.
He's camped out outside of Best Buy in Orlando. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity on your Thanksgiving Thursday. We've got some great weather coming up for today. It looks like fair weather at least up through midday Sunday. Then the next area of low pressure moves in, gives us some rainy weather for Sunday night, probably Monday, Tuesday, and maybe even Wednesday of next week. Still the possibility of some showers. But in the meantime, bright and sunny for today. Light winds, great for the parade. Temperatures will range into the mid-50s. Northwest winds at 5 to 10. For tonight, mostly clear and chilly during the overnight hours. Lows of 35 to 40 by daybreak Friday. And Friday features sunshine with our highs of 55 to 60 on light west winds. Mostly clear at night in the lower 40s. Saturday, mostly sunny, back to 60 degrees on Saturday. Sunday, partial sunshine, then becoming cloudy. Highs 55 to 60, a chance of showers Sunday night. Monday and Tuesday, a chance of showers each day, highs in the 50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point? I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Judge Susan Kettner, Councilman Al Tarantino, Dominic Procopio, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
I'm Shepard Smith. Happy Thanksgiving from our Fox News family to yours.
WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lovensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, November 24th, 2011, Thanksgiving Day, the 62nd day of autumn. Winter begins 4 weeks from today, December 22nd, the date of the winter solstice and the shortest day of the year. The flock of brant geese in Glen Island Park is still here, or perhaps it is a different flock. Haven't seen an egret or heron lately, so I assume they are all gone. Pretty soon, all of the migratory birds will be gone. You have 28 days to enjoy this glorious autumn, and then you'll start on the glorious winter, if you can look at it that way. We have lost 2 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 27 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 6:53 this morning. It will set at 4:31 this evening. 4:31, the sun sets. My goodness, that would be mid-afternoon in the summer. We will have 9 hours and 38 minutes of daylight today. That always amazes me how daylight changes. Sometimes at 4 o'clock you look out and it's almost dark, it's dusk, and by 5 o'clock you might as well go to bed or turn your lights on for sure. Whereas in the middle of the summer by 8 o'clock it's still bright. You know, I don't know. I understand why it is, and I know it is, but it's one of the wonders that never ceases to make me feel good. The moon is in the day sky. It's up there right now. It rose at 6:08 this morning. It will set at 3:59 this afternoon. We are 1 day short of new moon phase, and the next full moon is December 10th. We don't have any tide information today because everyone has abandoned ships, just me and Jovan holding the place down. The doors are locked. There's no coffee. I don't know if I'll make it through the hour, but we'll do it. We'll give it our best shot. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. The war takes no holidays. Private Jackie L. Diener II, age 20, of Boyne City, Michigan. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, wounded in combat with small arms fire in Kandahar Province. He died of those wounds November 21st. I believe the date he was wounded was the 18th. I lost that detail. He hung on for a few days. Corporal Zachary C. Reif, age 22, of Preston, Iowa. He was with the 1st Marine Division, wounded in combat on November 18th. Oh, this is the one who died. It was Corporal Reif who died on November 21st, having been wounded in combat November 18th in Helmand Province. These are all Afghanistan casualties. So Private Diener, the first gentleman that we mentioned, was wounded and died of those wounds on the same day, November 21st. Lance Corporal Joshua D. Coral, age 19, of Danville, California. He was with the 1st Marines, killed in combat in Helmand Province on November 18th. Possibly he was killed on the same day that Corporal Reif was wounded. Same outfit, same place. Private First Class Adam E. Dobereiner, age 21, of Moline, Illinois. He was with the 36th Engineer Brigade, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province, November 18th. Private First Class Matthew C. Collin, age 22, of Navarre, Florida. He was with the 25th Infantry, one of two soldiers killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar on November 16th. He was killed along with Specialist James R. Burnett, Jr., age 21, of Wichita, Kansas. Specialist Sean M. Walsh, San Jose, California. I don't have his age, I'm sorry to say. That detail got left out. My apologies to Specialist Walsh. He was with the California Army National Guard, killed by indirect fire in Coast Province on November 16th. Sergeant First Class Jonathan Bryant McCain, age 38, of Apache Junction, Arizona. He was also with the 25th Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on November 13th. Specialist Calvin Matthew Pareda, age 21, of Fayetteville, North Carolina, again with the 25th Infantry, killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on November 12th. Private First Class Theodore Boykin Rushing, age 25, from Longwood, Florida. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, and he was killed by a roadside bomb in Kandahar Province on November 11th. These 10 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Four of them were from the 25th Infantry, two each from the 1st Marine Division and the 10th Mountain Division. Many people fall from the 10th Mountain Division and from the 25th Infantry and from the 1st Marine Division. So those guys are right in the thick of it. Seven fell in Kandahar Province. And in addition, alongside our troops, four British soldiers and a Serbian were also killed in the same period. So who is dying in the field at this moment? Who is wounded? Who is calling for his mother or his sweetheart? I could get a lot more graphic, but I will spare you that. But just think about them. Be worthy of the gift you have of being an American and living in this country. I know there's lots to complain about, but you have that right to complain. And of course, many of us wish we were better off financially, but you do have a safe, comfortable roof over your head. You have walls to protect you from the storm. You do have enough money to put gas in your car, and not too many of you, though you may wish you had an iPad, don't have the food to take your hunger away. Please don't forget these fallen troops and those who continue to protect your lifestyle in the field. Don't forget, to put it another way, remember. Each of these American deaths is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Once again, congratulations to Ernie Davis, the once and future mayor of Mount Vernon. He was just on just before our program. I caught some of that. He's a true gentleman and an ambitious guy who loves challenges and has the intelligence and integrity to handle them. Mount Vernon is not back on track. Mount Vernon. That's what happens when you use spell check, right? Mount Vernon is back on track to advance and grow after a stagnant four-year hiatus. Welcome back, Mayor Davis. Now, I would like just a little personal note while we're doing obituaries. A friend of mine and a guest on this program, evolutionary biologist Lynn Margulis, died on Tuesday. She was an author. She won the National Medal of Science. And she died at her home on Tuesday in Amherst, Massachusetts, where she worked at the University of Massachusetts. She was just a mere 73 years old. Her title was Distinguished University Professor of Geosciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Once married to astronomer Carl Sagan, but she was best known for her theory of symbiogenesis. Try reading her book, Acquiring Genomes, sometimes. If you can understand it, I had to read it a few times to understand it, the parts that I understand. It's an enlightening book. That theory argues that inherited variation does not just come from random mutations, which I always thought and which most people who pay attention to this think, but from a long-lasting interaction between and among organisms. Also a strong proponent of the hypothesis that the Earth acts as a living organism. She created that with James Lovelock. They called it the Gaia Hypothesis. Lynn Margulis was elected to the National Academy of Sciences in 1983. She received the National Medal of Science in 1999. Born in Chicago, she was enrolled at the University of Chicago when she was 14 years old. She's been on this program three times. She's been in the studio twice. We had some wonderful experiences together, Lynn and I, at the passport office in Connecticut, where she used her Spanish, her fluent Spanish, to help some people. Had no idea that a world-famous scientist was helping them. And she just got down with the people, and that's just the way she was. She wouldn't have thought anything of it. I'm sure she did not. One time we were in Manhattan. She tore her pants on my car bumper. I took her to a tailor, and she was having her pants sewed while she was sitting in her drawers, and we were talking about electron microscopy and symbiogenesis. This is Lynn Margulis in her underwear behind a screen while her pants were getting sewed up. That's one of my favorite stories and experiences with Lynn. She'll be sorely missed by the science community and by me personally, not just for her work, but her character and her personality. Lynn Margulis, dead at 73 in Amherst, Massachusetts. Okay, time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions. You have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. We have several reviews today. Let's start with the Westchester Philharmonic. There's a lady named Ann Hobson Pilot. She had been with the Boston Symphony Orchestra for 40 years before she retired in 2009. She was principal harpist for the last 29 years. Miss Pilot was the first black woman principal player in a major symphony orchestra, quite a landmark. The composition she soloed at this performance was On Willows and Birches, which was composed for her specifically by famed composer John Williams, who considers her among the greatest harpists in the world. And this comes from a composer who, in addition to composing a large body of serious music, is one of the most prolific writers of movie scores ever. Some of the film music he has written, well, you're going to recognize all of these names: The Towering Inferno, Jaws, all the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Star Wars, and so many more. So this harp concerto played by Ms. Pilot, for whom it was written, was a very special treat at the Westchester Philharmonic. The other reason we chose to review this concert was conductor Tomomi Nishimoto. She's a Japanese woman of dynamic style. It seems like she's going to take off as she waves her arms and body like a bird in flight. Let's just take our break now. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York, and we will be right back.
Minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD2.
From the Fox Business Network, driving more and paying more this Thanksgiving holiday, more than 38 million Americans jumping in the car for their Turkey Day travel plans. That is up about 4% from last year. But the cost of filling up your tank, well, that's up, but a lot more. Gas prices around 15% higher this Thanksgiving. Markets closed for the holiday, but it has been a very rough November for stocks thus far. More shoppers may be skipping the Black Friday lines to go online. A new report saying online spending will increase 15% this holiday season. More companies are offering free and low-cost shipping to get shoppers clicking and buying. And amid the holiday hustle and bustle, some companies are, well, getting put on Santa's naughty list. Consumer Reports putting Southwest Airlines, Verizon Wireless, and GameStop on that list for things like charging extra fees and making returns very tough. As for the nice list, Amazon.com, American Express, and Costco, they all made that cut. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Neil Cavuto.
Hi, I'm a home. You know, where your heart is. Don't worry, I know how you feel about me. That's why you need to get me flood insurance. If you get homesick after a few days, imagine how a flood would make you feel. Just a few inches of water can cost tens of thousands of dollars in damage. And homeowners insurance doesn't cover floods. But in moderate to low risk areas, flood insurance starts as low as $129 a year. Visit floodsmart.gov to learn how a flood could affect you.
Thanks for making us your favorite station year-round. Happy Thanksgiving from your radio family at AM 1460 WVOX.
WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Levinsold, Environmentally Sound, on WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. We were reviewing the Westchester Philharmonic. Just one more thing about that. The Westchester Philharmonic is a treasure right here in Westchester County. I cannot recommend them highly enough. If you're a person of culture, they must certainly be on your radar. This was a great concert. I didn't love the selections, but you can't listen to Mozart's 40th and Beethoven's 9th every single time, or you possibly get tired of those. Maybe not. Those are so magnificent that maybe you won't. But the Scheherazade and Liszt preludes were okay. They were played magnificently, but, you know, they just weren't that great. I just don't love the pieces that much. All right, the next review we have is a review of Richard II, Shakespeare's play, at the Pearl Theater at the City Center in Manhattan. If you like Shakespeare, you'll love all the Pearl's productions, including this one. But Shakespeare is kind of tough. Right, so this is not for everybody. This play takes place actually in the 14th century, so it's, you know, ancient history almost. Not ancient, but old history. It speaks to power and identity, and it actually brought to mind more recent sagas of people like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi. These two heads of state, fabulously wealthy, they both could have gotten out and lived in luxury anywhere that would have had them, and there were places that both of them could go. But both refused to relinquish power, though it meant their certain death. The power was just so much part of their personas. Their identities were just tied up with power, so fortune didn't mean that much. They had to be in charge. And that's the way it is with Richard II. His whole identity is tied up with being king, and when he loses that, he is as a car without a road, a fish without water, a bird without air, Casanova without a woman. The play starts with an angry pair of nobles requesting a duel to the death. Richard allows it at first, but then he stops it as just soon as it has begun, and banishes both principals, one for 6 years, the other for life. Both really would prefer to die for their honor. Neither one wanted banishment. And it's not clear to me, perhaps it's in there somewhere, but Shakespeare's a little hard sometimes to follow everything. It's not clear to me why one was banished for 6 years, one was banished for life. Were the accusations true? Were they not? What part did Richard have in a certain murder? Well, it's just all the Shakespearean stuff that if you really want to be an expert on Shakespeare, you can study it. I personally don't. But the joke, the king jokes about self-enrichment, about how he's going to get their property when they're gone and all of that. But the main conflict actually is not a violent conflict. It is the surrender of a king who has lost his sense of self. And also the duel never really happened. So this is not the typical Shakespeare tragedy where everybody dies on stage. So Shakespeare, no matter how brilliantly written and no matter how poetic the metaphors, is not for everyone. And mind you, it is brilliantly written stuff. And the metaphors are just beautiful if you can get into the language. But you must follow closely a different language, Elizabethan English, rather than what we know as English. It's kind of difficult, but you get it. It's more flowery, less direct, beautiful if you get it, but easy to get lost if you don't. Playing Richard II was Sean McNall, an Obie winner, one of my favorite up-and-coming actors. I have seen him play better. Perhaps he chose to portray Richard as a less dynamic character, but I've seen Sean play people much more exciting than this. He has that in him. He chose to downplay this particular character, but maybe this character is who it should have been, and I just didn't get it. Maybe Richard, that's just a reading of Richard II as someone who is more quiet. But I like to see Sean cavort, and he does a little bit, but I like to see him when he really gets his acting on, and he's a joy to watch. So perhaps there's there probably is a good reason that this is not one of Shakespeare's more popular plays. It's a little tedious, but whatever the reason, this production does not sing like most of the Pearls productions, and most of them do sing, the Pearls productions. Make no mistake about that. Keep the Pearl Theater. It's at the City Center on 55th Street. On your radar, if you have any interest in the classics. It's not always Shakespeare, but they do Shaw, Ibsen, they do other classics as well. Okay, the last thing we're going to review before the break was a play called Fragments. It was produced at the Baryshnikov Arts Center on West 37th Street. It's a compilation of short pieces from the great Samuel Beckett, one of the darkest of playwrights, yet curiously optimistic and existential in his outlook on life. These five short pieces, now short, I say short, the whole production takes about an hour, there's no break. They're moody pieces, the message is not really products of the words, it's the movement and the total message. The words are almost superfluous, and in fact one of the pieces is just mime, period, there's no words at all. In that one, the scene opens with two large white sacks on the stage, and a large white pointer descends from the ceiling and points to each of the sacks in turn. So when it points to your sack, the man gets out, goes through his daily routine of getting ready for work, but he struggles all the way through and struggles in a funny way that makes the audience laugh at its own daily grind and the mishaps in good days and bad days, which we are all subject to and victims of. So the first man has trouble getting his pants on, only to discover they are on backwards, and he must start all over again. He also has trouble with his shoes, his toothbrush, a childproof pill bottle. But when he does go to do his work, he dragging the other sack, it's just very heavy and hard, and everything in his life is hard. He takes a carrot out of his pocket. It tastes nasty. He's like the sad clown played all those years by Emmett Kelly of Ringling Brothers Circus fame. But just the opposite, when it's the other sack's turn to be pointed out and open, this fellow has slept restfully, dresses quickly, brushes his teeth. He's got a smile on his face. He puts his toothbrush in his underarms. He cleans up all over. And he has a much easier time sliding the other sack across the stage. Everything goes well for him. He finds the carrot in his pocket delicious, as guy number one did not. Now, in two other little interstitial pieces, the one female performer of the trio, there are three actors in this, speaks of solitude, hers and everyone else's, sitting in her window and facing other windows and windows and windows and windows on and on. And in her other solo piece, she does the same thing, different words, but also about solitary, solitary. Now, the group shines in the final vignette. They're all dressed as women. The two men and the woman are all dressed as women. They take turns gossiping in pairs. They send the third one off always on some other mission. And then there are two of them gossiping, and they talk about the other one. And we'll never know what secrets they're talking about, but you can just tell from the body language that there's something god-awful, ghastly. So they, however, what they're gossiping about is irrelevant. They are only as relevant as we are. The visuals here are stunning. The two men are taller than the woman, and she knows just how to shrink herself to look even smaller. The contrast is great, even as they switch positions to make different forms. For this reviewer, it was the visuals more than the dialogue that were interesting in this final piece. The actors, Joss Whedon, Marcello Magni, Catherine Hunter, all very professional and effective in their roles. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Apache Junction, Arizona, Boyne City, Michigan, Wichita, Kansas, Moline, Illinois, Navarre, or Longwood, Florida, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. I am Bob Levinsohn. This program is Environmentally Sound, and we will be back with Gretchen Biggs in just a moment.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Three American students taken into custody this week during anti-government protests in Egypt are reportedly in the process of being released.
There's word from Associated Press that they were ordered released by a judge in Cairo. Now, no confirmation from here in Washington as yet. The three boys were arrested by Egyptian officials and accused of throwing Molotov cocktails from the roof of a building during the unrest in Tahrir Square.
Fox's Steve Santani in Washington. The students denied the charges. No signs of survivors from last night's fiery crash of a small plane in Arizona.
I looked up and I saw this fireball and it rose up. And then all of a sudden, kapoof, boom. And that's when it spread whatever fuel and everything all over the place.
He saw the crash into the mountains east of Phoenix. The sheriff's office saying the body of one child has been found. Two other children and three men are also feared dead. Fox News, we report, you decide.
The most innovative and groundbreaking local transportation service is now here. The Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle. The one and only Green Team Cab Corporation features all new 2011 super luxurious hybrid cars that really make you feel like you're being driven in style and comfort. The Green Team is perfect for all your corporate needs. A trip to the airport or just a ride anywhere locally. Call Brian Herbie or Mr. O'Mara today at the Green Team Cab Corporation in New Rochelle for a new kind of luxury transportation experience second to none. We love the Green Team and you will too. 914-576-1200 in New Rochelle, 576-1200. Credit cards accepted in the car, no minimums, no forced gratuity. 576-1200. The Green Team, now the most innovative and superior way to travel. The Green Team, saving the planet one ride at a time.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Here's the updated weather forecast for your Thanksgiving Day. Plenty of sunshine today. Our highs will range into the mid-50s. Northwest winds at 5 to 10. Almost perfect weather on your Thanksgiving Day. For tonight, mostly clear. Overnight lows 35 to 40. Sunny weather for Friday. Temperatures tomorrow warming up to 55 to 60. It'll be clear at night in the lower 40s. Saturday features sunshine near 60. Sunday, partly sunny, then clouding up. Highs in the 50s to near 60 on Sunday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Thanksgiving. What makes it a special time for you?
Cooking.
Eating a lot of food.
Turkey, pumpkin, and cranberry.
Stuffing you with holiday cheer. We're AM 1460, WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Levinsohn. The program is Environmentally Sound. My guest today is Gretchen Biggs, environmental attorney. She is active in the growing movement to control leaf blowers. Ms. Biggs has been on CBS television as part of a feature on this subject. Speaking to us from Greenwich, Connecticut, welcome Gretchen Biggs.
Thank you.
Good morning. Am I just blowing smoke, or is it actually a growing movement, or is it stagnant?
Well, no, it is definitely a growing movement. Just since we began Greenwich Calm here in Greenwich, about three other towns in Connecticut have contacted me to start their own chapters of Calm. There's a Ridgefield Calm and a New Canaan Calm kind of in the works.
So CALM is C-A-L-M.
Yeah,
CALM.
Which stands for Citizens Against Leaf Blower Mania. we do consider it to be kind of a mania that has swept this area in particular.
Well, not just your area. I'm in New Rochelle, and they are very annoying here as well. But I know that we have some kind of an ordinance, which you actually wish you had.
Exactly. Yeah, most of the Westchester County towns do have ordinances. There are something like 13 or 14 towns in Westchester County that have part-time bans on leaf blowers. I think maybe even some have full-time bans, but they are regulated a lot more than they are here in Greenwich, and no other towns in Connecticut have anything.
So what? Why is it problematic? Are the authorities, the politicians, the public officials in Connecticut resistant to this kind of change? Is it just new to them and haven't gotten the message yet, or are they actively resisting?
Well, I don't really know why it's a problem, because to me it seems like a no-brainer that we'd want to improve the quality of life for all of us by having reasonable restrictions on the use of these extremely loud and extremely toxic machines. But I'm surmising that the reason it's hard to get it done here in Greenwich is just more the force of inertia than anything else. I mean, people are just resistant to change. It's really pretty hard to get anything done in local government.
Okay, so it's the resistance to change rather than a positive, we have to keep leaf blowers. It's just...
Yeah, I don't really think it is that. There's certainly not an organized resistance to having a ban. It's just pushing a rock up a hill to get anything to happen.
You mean like Sisyphus?
Yeah, exactly. I'm beginning to feel like a very tired Sisyphus.
Well, you do have help, though.
Yeah, I do. And our town government, sort of supposedly supports the idea of regulating leaf blowers. Not even supposedly. They have said that they do, our first selectman, but it just never seems to actually happen. And people are so busy and are committed to so many different things that it's hard to get things done. So,
well, do you have... are meetings public? Can various people come? Can the public come to the meetings and make themselves heard?
Well, we haven't really had any public meetings that we announced publicly. No, we haven't. But we're certainly in the press enough, and there have been some town meetings about the subject, so that the public, for what it's worth, the public is involved, and the public has spoken that they would like restrictions, but it still hasn't happened.
So the selectmen do know.
Yeah, they know.
Okay, now
absolutely.
Now, I've long hated these things. I consider them an abomination, but I guess they do perform the task. I mean, I've watched them, especially since I saw you on television. I've watched them to say, are these really efficient? They do seem to get a lot of leaves in big piles much more quickly than a rake would do. I personally love the sound of rakes, and it's not that I would settle for a lesser evil. I really like the way rakes sound going across the ground.
Well, and you get a little exercise, and you're kind of aerating your lawn when you use
them. Right. Now, I have no problem also with leaving leaves on the ground as nature intended, just to biodegrade and enrich the soil. That's the natural way. But those days are gone. So there's more than just noise, though. What are the dangers? I always thought it was just terrible noise, but you say there's much more to it.
It's much, much, much more than noise. But first of all, just back to what you were saying a minute ago, it has actually been shown in demonstrations or sort of experiments that the leaf blowers really do not collect leaves more efficiently or more quickly than a rake.
Really?
They don't. But in any case, most of the bans in Westchester County and the ban that we're asking for, wouldn't have anything to do with leaf collection season. It would be go ahead and use your leaf blower in leaf collection season. They're only... summertime bans, or sometimes sort of extended summertime, May through October or something like that, May through September. But the real reason to ban them completely in the summer months when it's not about collecting leaves is that they're being used year-round as much as they are during leaf collection season. They're being used the exact same amount all through the summer when there are no leaves at all, and they're being used to collect grass clippings and just clean hardscapes of dust and debris, it, mainly grass. Every time somebody cuts their grass, they clean up the clippings with leaf blowers. And so here where I live, and I measure it very carefully, I'm on a fairly condensed street with lots of houses within earshot of me. The leaf blower crews come around year-round, you know, once a week to most of these houses, and use them for the exact same amount, whether it's November and there are piles of leaves, or whether it's July and there are no leaves at all. So they're just used for everything. We call them dust blowers, not leaf blowers. They're not used for leaves primarily.
Now, wouldn't it be more efficient if you're going to use a machine to vacuum them up than to...
It would be more efficient to just use a broom, one of those wide push brooms, or to not do it at all. This obsession with sort of pristine billiard table looking lawns and hardscapes and, you know, all these words that are new in our vocabulary is just really, it's become an extreme where nobody thinks anything of subjecting their neighbors to not only this ear-splitting noise, but also the toxins, the air pollution from these machines in order to, you know, sort of have an extreme level of so-called tidiness on their lawn. It's sort of silly. And it's very uncivil, an uncivil way to live in a neighborhood, to have just this really horrendous noise in my neighborhood almost all the time. For what?
Well, I couldn't agree more. My theory personally is that they're phallic and that guys feel more manly when they're making a lot of noise and they have this big thing strapped on their back. That's what I think personally.
Well, I think you're right, because I do often see them being used, somebody walking around waving it and not doing anything at all. They're not collecting grass clippings or leaves. They're just sort of waving it around. And the landscape crews, which is, I would say, 95%, maybe 99% of the use of leaf blowers is landscape crews. It's not individuals using one on a weekend. It's these crews that come around to every house. Even modest houses in Greenwich all have their landscape crew. They don't do anything themselves.
Right.
And these guys use them for maybe it's 20 minutes of their stop at each house. So, you know, they have a sort of set time, and they're just going to have it out and have it on whether there's anything to do with it or not, because that's part of their little routine.
Now, you say that they're actually not efficient. Now, my observation, this is not science, it's just a brief empirical observation, is that they actually do move the one man can move a lot of leaves in a short period of time, shorter than with a rake. You say that that's not so?
No, it isn't, because for one thing, the landscape crews are using them, you know, 5 days a week wherever they have their jobs. Some of those days it's damp, it can be pouring rain, and they're using them. They don't work at all in those conditions. Now, in perfect dry conditions, it certainly will look like you're sort of clearing a large area of lawn of leaves with a leaf blower, but in fact you're blowing them up in the air where they're blowing somewhere else, that you've got to sort of re-herd them in a few minutes later from somewhere else. They don't stay put. If you're doing it on a windy day, forget it. If you're doing it on a wet day, forget it. A lot of the times what people are doing is they're blowing them out into the street or over into their neighbor's yard, which isn't allowed, but that's what's being done with them. They're really not doing the job of getting the leaves up and put wherever they should go very well.
So the machines could be more efficient, but they're just being abused rather than used properly. If they were used properly in the proper weather, proper conditions, dry, and just used as much as they were needed, will you concede that they have that use?
I think so, yeah. I think used for certain tasks in certain conditions, they probably are the best tool for certain things. It's just their overuse that we object to.
Oh, I'm completely with you. And now there is a resistance from the industry, I'm sure. I did see on that same program there was a representative of the manufacturer. He said that the blowers have actually gotten quieter. I don't see that. I mean, they've been making this same racket forever. But besides, people who own them tend to keep them. They don't just throw them out and say, okay, let's get the newer, quieter one.
Well, they certainly don't. And that's because if you go into a store to buy one today, the quieter they are, the more expensive they are. So So it's still the best economic choice, which most people are certainly thinking about, if not ruled by, to get the loudest, most powerful one on the market. So there are quieter models, and there probably always have been somewhat quieter models, but nobody buys them.
And as I said, if they have an older one that's making a racket, they're still going to use it. Okay, let's just take a break, Gretchen, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, okay? You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Preston, Iowa, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Danville, San Jose, or Oxnard, California, or Titty Hill, Sussex, England, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. My guest is environmental attorney Gretchen Biggs. And I am Bob Lovensold, Environmentally Sound. We will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. Three American students taken into custody this week during anti-government protests in Egypt are reportedly in the process of being released.
There's word from Associated Press that they were ordered released by a judge in Cairo. Now, no confirmation from here in Washington as yet. The three boys were arrested by Egyptian officials and accused of throwing Molotov cocktails from the roof of a building during the unrest in Tahrir Square.
Fox's Steve Santani in Washington. The students denied the charges. No signs of survivors from last night's fiery crash of a small plane in Arizona.
I looked up and I saw this fireball and it rose up. And then all of a sudden, kapoof, boom. And that's when it spread whatever fuel and everything all over the place.
He saw the crash into the mountains east of Phoenix. The sheriff's office saying the body of one child has been found. Two other children and three men are also feared dead. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Today's public service programs are brought to you by the Burnback Law Firm of White Plains. This famous Manhattan law firm, now in Westchester, is a national leader in workplace job discrimination issues. Headed by attorney Jeffrey M. Burnback, the author of the well-known book, Job Discrimination, How to Fight, How to Win, the classic text informing employees of legal options available in cases of job discrimination, the Burnback Law Firm is located in downtown White Plains at 245 Main Street across from City Center. Airline founder Don Burr says Jeff Burnback's overview view and knowledge of job discrimination ranks with other sweeping visions of employee empowerment. Another reviewer said, as a lawyer and public servant, Jeff Burnback has been drawn relentlessly, almost irresistibly, to the side of those who faced discrimination in all its forms. His entire life and law practice are dedicated to those who find themselves without an advocate when the roof caves in at work. Now, all this great knowledge, dedication, and expertise is available in our area at the Burnback Law Firm in White Plains, 914-428-9100. Area code 914-428-9100.
This is Charles Massimi at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's World Headquarters in Purchase, New York. I've been on the radio in New York State for over 25 years, during which our nation has gone through many changes and been confronted by financial upheaval and political turmoil. Through it all, I've been privileged to enjoy the confidence of many thousands of radio listeners on WVOX and WVIP who have bestowed their confidence and trust in me and my Morgan Stanley Smith Barney Associates. My business card says Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, but to those careful and astute investors who have entrusted a good portion of their hard-earned wealth to me and mine over the years, I've become so much more than that. If your portfolio and holdings are in need of a timely review, I'd be very glad to arrange a conference where we could sit down and for no cost or obligation review what your financial investment goals are. We're at 2000 Westchester Avenue, right off the Hutch in Westchester County. You can call me direct at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney's headquarters at 914-225-7158. Once again, that's 914-225-7158. My secretary's name is Sandra, and she'll be glad to set up an appointment. 914-225-7158.
Thanks for inviting us to your Thanksgiving.
Hey, Mom, how did all these people get in here?
Hey, just think of us as your radio family. We're AM 1460, WVOX.
WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Leventhal. The program is Environmentally Sound. The station is WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle or www.wvox.com. We are speaking with Gretchen Biggs, environmental attorney in Greenwich, Connecticut, and we are speaking about leaf blowers. Welcome back, Gretchen.
Thank you.
Now, what are others doing? It's not just a local thing. I'm sure wherever there are ears and leaf blowers, there are conflicts.
Wherever there are lungs.
Lungs and ears. I think it was it Julie Newmar who shared that program? Do I have the name right?
Yes, exactly. And Catwoman.
And she's got to be in Hollywood, right?
She's somewhere in the L.A. area, yeah.
Okay, somewhere out there. So they're having a problem there, too. So how global is this? It's not a local concern. Is the movement to at least control, if not ban, these abominations nationwide or worldwide? What is it?
Yeah, well, it is, actually. There are over 200 towns and cities in the U.S. that have banned them, including the entire city of Los Angeles, which is, I don't know how many million people. Houston, Texas, Toronto, Canada, whole cities, huge cities, have banned them, I think, completely.
Beautiful.
I think in L.A. you can't use a leaf blower, period, anytime for anything.
Absolutely.
The country of Israel, the entire country has banned them. The state of Hawaii has banned them.
Cool.
So it's not a novel idea to regulate them or even to ban them. You know, and here in Greenwich, we're asking for such a modest,
right.
We're asking for a few months off from them when our windows right. are open and our kids are playing outside, and we can't get it.
Sure. Well, you know, you mentioned Hawaii. I think probably tropical locales don't have deciduous trees anyway, so it's less of a problem, I would think.
Well, as I say, they're not used primarily for the leaves falling from our trees, which, after all, fall for about a month, I guess. They're used year-round for everything, and so they're used. They probably were used just as much in Hawaii. I mean, those trees shed and sort of drop little brown dead leaves just as much as our big deciduous trees do. There's debris from nature wherever it occurs, and Hawaii is sort of jungle. I'm sure there's loads of debris. So
let us call it detritus.
Yeah,
debris is
exactly.
man-made.
I mean,
right?
it's a myth that they are that we need them because we have these deciduous trees and so many more leaves. They're not used for the leaves. That's a small part of what they're used for.
Wow. Has the industry offered resistance? Are they fighting you other than making a couple of public relations statements? Are they saying, hey, this is the typical objection is, well, you'll cost people jobs.
Oh, they're fighting extremely. They have a full-time lobbyist who is a retired employee of ECHO, who they send around to quell these grassroots movements in whatever towns they occur in. And, of course, he's come here. He's come here, and he's organized the landscapers and given them a whole bunch of propaganda and talking points, and he's written our town selectman an 8-page letter. And, oh, yeah, they're resisting big time. They know that once this movement really gets going, they're in big trouble and they're on the way out.
Well, you know, I've often said this about many industries, that it's just time to get new jobs. The lumber industry has always said, well, people go out of jobs. And my point is, well, just wait a few more years and you'll run out of trees. Then where are the jobs going to be? And then you'll have no trees and no jobs. So why not save some trees and start getting new jobs now?
Well, the thing about losing jobs is an interesting one, because who are we talking about losing jobs if we were to get leaf blower bans? Are we talking about the landscapers and their employees? Because supposedly it takes them longer, supposedly, to rake and use a broom and stuff. So that would be more jobs if we got rid of leaf blowers.
Good point.
So I'm not quite sure. But, of course, there is the fear of loss of jobs, and that's constantly raised. But I've never understood that argument.
Well, the manufacturers would probably say, well, we have people putting these things together. They would lose their jobs. But, yeah.
Well, no, not really. They could put together some kind of quiet tool for moving leaves or, you know, either improving leaf blowers or sort of redesigning a sort of vacuum that would do some other way.
Mm-hmm. So what... I always thought they were primarily a leaf thing. This is very educational to me. What else are they blowing up? You know, I would walk by the cloud and be annoyed more by the noise than by the dust, thinking it was just dust. What's in that dust?
Well, remember, since they're being used year-round just as much, at least here, they're used just as much in the summer as in the winter. That it's not about leaves all those other times. It's about just, as you said, detritus, debris, little things that fall off plants, grass clippings. So that's what they're trying to blow. Now, what are they actually blowing? They're blowing the pesticides off your neighbor's lawn onto yours and into your lungs.
Really?
They're blowing mold, feces of animals, spores and allergens. They're blowing heavy metals off of the roadways.
Ouch.
Dust, just general particulate matter. You know, everything that shouldn't be up in the air and going in our lungs, they're putting up there.
So I imagine asthmatics would have a particularly hard time, and I imagine some older people who have any kind of lung conditions could actually be killed by this kind of thing.
Well, yes, and I think that's partly why emphysema and bronchitis and asthma and all kinds of bronchial disorders rise in the summer months, is because particulate matter in general is higher in the summer months. Air pollution is worse in the summer months, and the leaf blowers and other small machinery like lawnmowers contribute significantly, and I mean significantly,
wow,
to air pollution. You don't think they do, but they do, because leaf blowers emit the equivalent of what 440 cars emit in the same period of time.
Say that
one
again.
One leaf blower.
One leaf blower does what now?
One leaf blower emits the same hydrocarbons and other, I can give you the exact facts here if I just look at my notes for a second, but carbon monoxide, fine particulate matter, and other toxic air contaminants. This is from a study out of Toronto, which has ended up with them banning leaf blowers completely. But they came to the conclusion that, here, I'll read it right here. Compared to a large car, 1 hour of operation of a leaf blower emits 498 times as much hydrocarbons, 49 times as much particulate matter, and 20 times as much carbon monoxide as one large car driven for an hour.
Whoa. So basically 500.
They're extremely, extremely polluting because they put so much unburned exhaust into the air because of their two-stroke engine.
Right.
So they contribute significantly to the air pollution. The air pollution is bad for the asthmatics and people with other, you know, other sufferers of bronchial issues. So,
lawnmowers also use two cycle engines, but I presume they're less objectionable for some reason?
I just don't know anything about lawnmowers.
Okay.
I just know that leaf blowers in particular are way more polluting than you would ever imagine.
Okay, Gretchen, you must have a website where people can go to learn more.
www.greenwichcalm.org. A lot of this information and better presented than I'm able to just pull it off the cuff is on the website.
Okay, so it's www.greenwichcalm. That's Greenwich as it is. CALM, greenwichcalm.org. Okay, that's
right.
The website. So if anybody is interested in more information or getting involved, that's certainly a place to go.
Yes, it is.
What is the future of the movement? Are you getting weary? I know you're a mother. You have children to raise. You have a career.
Well, I am getting weary, of course, and so is my entire team here in Greenwich, because we're just faced with sort of the apathy and the inertia here. But we're so motivated, too, because it really makes life almost unlivable in these small neighborhoods when you have that awful sort of screeching, whining almost all the time, year-round.
I hate it.
365 days a year.
You know, that is when that is how a movement proves itself. There's always frustration, there's always resistance, and when you stick to it and you get the right team together, that's what does it. Gretchen, so I hope you do stay with it. I will certainly thank you. My ears will thank you. My nose will thank you.
You're listening to Fox News.
Do I still have you, Gretchen?
Yes.
I'm sorry. We had a glitch there. I was just saying thank you very much for being on the program. I learned a lot. I appreciate it. And I hope we'll stay in touch. I hope I'll hear good things and progress in the movement.
Well, I hope so, too.
Thank you so much, Gretchen.
All right. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you. I'd like to thank Gretchen Biggs for taking the time out of her working and mothering to spend this hour with us. As I said, I believe leaf blowers are an abomination. They make a terrible racket, which starts as early as 8 a.m. And I now know they're a health hazard as well. Now, in New Rochelle here, we have it a little bit better, and in various other Westchester communities. So thanks to the legislators who have at least provided us with that relief. It's still terrible, but it's better than, I guess, in Greenwich. So I'm happy to know that I'm not alone in my abhorrence of these vile machines. If you feel as I do and wish to make your voices heard, you may email me from my website, which is www.environmentallysound.org, or you can leave a message for me here at the station. I'll see if there's something we can do locally, or you can go to greenwichcalm.org. It does seem that New Rochelle has one of the better ordinances, so if you live here, okay. But it's hard to believe that what we actually have is actually better than anywhere, but I guess we take quiet for granted and expect it. Our thought for the week, this comes from a tombstone in England. Remember, man, as you walk by, as you are now, so once was I. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Enjoy yourselves. Go ahead, gorge yourselves on this day. Be thankful for your gifts. Be thankful that you are an American. Thank you for...
Welcome to Thanksgiving week.
When is this Thanksgiving thing going to be over?
Traditionally, after Thanksgiving.
Your Turkey Day headquarters. AM 1460 WVOX and WVIP HD2 New Rochelle.
Fox News Radio. I'm Dave Anthony. They were detained as part of the protest that...